long you can keep up the discussion, and then your task is to summarize the outcome of the debate. Was there one of the perspectives who had one of the teams did was any one of the teams stronger, or was it pretty even? And then summarize the points for and the points against planning. We'll just discuss this as a class. And the debate moderators will lead the summarization. I gave the moderators a list of questions that you can go and ask the teams if you think that the debate isn't going anywhere. And also some of the questions are kind of like more biased towards one perspective. So if it seems that the debate is going towards poor planning winning, then some of the questions are steered to focus on the downside of the planning and vice versa. Do the debate moderators understand your role?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. The rules are that everyone should be allowed to speak about equally, and if someone is trying to give like a 5-minute monologue, then the debate moderator should point that out and tell that person to be quiet or please finish and let others speak as well. You've been pretty good at that, keeping your comments a reasonable length. Also, if there tends to be like one person dominating, then the debate moderator will start giving turns. And you can also decide how you give turns. Do you raise hands, or do you just go and try to manage it without raising hands? Yes.
Question regarding the moderator. So when the teams are discussing, am I more like observant?
You're observing, you're making notes of the points.
Yeah.
And then if it seems that the debate is not going anywhere, you have the questions to facilitate. And if it seems that one team is dominating the other, then there is questions to steering the debate to one direction or another. All clear? All right. The debate moderators, it's all yours. You can start with the initial question.
Well, technically, you just admitted that planning is necessary. So, but the bakery, where small businesses, anyway, they will need some regional development. And of course, it may be small, but if they're speaking, for instance, about a chemical industry, when you're entering a new market, when you're trying to sustain your operations, not just fall behind the market. Yeah. You're just trying to stay where you want. You will definitely need a plan, not to fall behind the
industry. Most of the stuff has
not to
very all the stuff that have very limited resources.
In this way, you only learn how to resist,
so, and it really
and just elaborate
takes time
on the ideas of
work. Very
so you have some actions, like basic tools. It's like a pilot who knows what to do in a critical situation with the automatic tools.
It would be a better idea to use those kind of resources to
the
present
the example is
idea,
do
experiments
cool.
Instead of just
but,
doing
pilots,
comprehend
they,
or just
they
in
they
general
training.
Planning.
Rather than
so, like,
plan.
That your point is
it's done through
to
systematic,
the business,
they go through school, they go through training, it's more of, like, it's more of a skill that's done through a process that is learning and
like starting a business
practical set of skills.
You should have some idea
not
to
be eaten
but
by
then when you go and start testing,
well,
that's
where
you have
to
be strict plan,
into your
it's going
capabilities,
be like some kind of
you
barricaders. You can
of what are your core capabilities?
You can be that just so open-minded if you have a plan, but like try out. Like for example, you have customers without locking yourself,
identifying
decided customer
base in the business. So that is my perspective.
Disagree with you because. Well, of course, experience comes from training, but the training comes from memory, and muscle memory come with errors. If you rely just on your experience and without anticipating the worst, you're doomed
but
for
still
failure.
If their plan is
and
like
especially
really
if you
like
have, for example, a
like
small shop like
a
bakery or a grocery store, what would you do in case the electricity cost triples because some large country invades foreign territory in the 21st century in Europe?
Well,
I'm not pointing with fingers.
The
So, but wait, I will cut off here because now there's been only guys talking. So, what are your arguments?
Regarding that, what Krista said, I do think that having a like without having any sort of plan, how would you even have any direction? Like, basically, you would just be running all over the place. Having at least some sort of plan doesn't have to be something super strict, and it can just be a sort of a guideline or a rough draft, and be and so I say plan, but be willing to change. Plan, but don't plan, if that makes sense. So, in a way, combining the best of both worlds, in a sense, pulling together, saying, yeah, I'm going to plan this, but things change, that's fine too. And work, being able to be adaptable into your business plan, and then you can sort of
retract. Well, it can be trial and error. You learn along the way. And then you achieve what you're
doing. Personal.
Like, for example, you have a strategy like planning, and then you don't follow that plan. Is that a strategy if you don't follow that? So basically, when you are at that like situation that you can really make a strategy, then you have multiple things that are already like found out that you have the customer base, you have the product, then you can follow your strategy and plan. But in the beginning, I would just go with the flow and like test things out, learn by doing.
Most like extensive, and the most of the time is based on assumption about beginning. But if you really like do something according to the feedback, the feedback from your actual customer,
your
that can
good.
Get more accurate.
Because when you are making the plan, you are just revising
your business.
You remember
to do your business.
What do you have?
All
right,
I have a question for you. How about business plan
competition?
They play a role in marketing.
Maybe I don't know something. So the planning is like an essential tool for this. And I continue to oppose Eric. The current resources and your capabilities are great. They're necessary. What are you going to do with them? If you don't know where to implement them, where to use them, if you don't have any perspective on them. So you analyze it. Yes, I have this. So what will you do with that?
So, that's a fantastic question. But I'd like to take a step back because you mentioned that business models can be scared about. So, first of all, a lot of business models can be supported by force analysis. It's management thought that originated back in the 80s, 90s. And it was a fantastic tool at the time. But the problem is that the markets have developed.
It's a battle between companies, but rather it's a more complex battle.
So, and as you're creating a complex battle, you have to rely on multiple points of knowledge and sources. So, in that case, knowing how to leverage your capabilities, knowing how to leverage knowledge from within your ecosystem is probably a lot more like relevant than understanding who's the cow and who's the bear, and you know, like one day, like you have a large partner in your system, but then the next day that partner decided that, hey, we're actually not interested in adding value to this ecosystem, we would rather work with a different ecosystem. So because we're operating inherently in a very dynamic market, those tools, they may not be very up to date. That's one thing.
What was your question?
What you said about the understanding is exactly the part of the business plan.
I have actually read what you were saying earlier.
Is it pointless
to make a course book emphasizes learning by doing and acting in order to learn?
As I said before, you should make plans but be willing to change them. And be very close to what
So the course book emphasizes learning by doing, also acting in order to learn. So learning by doing and acting to learn. How does planning relate to this view? So for example, when you're planning, how does learning by doing and doing actions
planning is not
pointless
because it can like for planning. As the future is uncertain, can it maybe be some way, or if you plan...
So, learning by doing, of course, yes, if you learn new skills, you still need the past.
Guidelines.
Like, you cannot just go run into the world and then you don't know anything learning by doing. Yeah, of course, you might learn, might really mess up, you know, you don't run like blindfolded into a room that you're not familiar with.
Well, I mean, special forces, they always have to enter rooms that they are
on. Special, but they have guns.
Well, this is the point of understanding your resources and your capabilities once again.
Did you see?
And I'm not opposing the concept.
They have a plan. They have a plan.
You are
caught with a special force because you are set
that the people can really like put their opinion or say some words about these things, but then when we go back to the real life, then the planning is not in that important.
Guys,
two questions back. So, if you apply for the competition, then I agree that you should have some kind of plan to, like, show get what you're planning to do. But then, when you go to the real life, that's like a whole different situation. Because then you have real customers, not the judges there. And I decided to stay with
them. So then you suggest the experience to, or so you
yes,
to
yes.
What you know, what you don't know, and you have fun. You have to learn. And
I would say integrate more customers into your planning process, and then it won't be all just superfluous business jargon that doesn't lead to anything. So in a way, I say,
if I may supplement my
the average person, you really have.
And Thomas, you mentioned about certain that takes into account kind of impact of electricity prices, prices of grain.
Takes into account
we all know what Thomas was referring to.
The
concept of black swans.
Talking
these are events that are unforeseen, that happen, and it's a reality that smaller players. So unless you're some large player like Koch Industries, a multi-trillion company or
the course
book or, like, unless you're a very large player in the market, then it's very difficult to plan for these events because that's the whole point, they're unforeseen.
Yep.
And secondly, when these events do happen, your goal is not to prosper in those events, but your goal is rather to survive, which again boils down to understanding core capabilities and your core differentiators. From other people within your system and within your marketplace.
I don't quite understand the question itself.
I would like to
answer
myself.
No. I kind of lost my train of thought for a second.
Just as I mentioned, the course for breaking into the door, the processes that do before the breaking into the door, to prepare.
So the idea is that
it's a large
course book says that information,
and it's over. For us, it's over planner. But still, when you are prepared for everything, when you are prepared for
the time that you spend on writing,
you are stuck in the plan. Of course, you will not track accordingly.
Go
and if you have and you understand the roles that are set in your room. But you know, just like how can it go?
So your point to this was that you can plan, but then you can improvise.
You can base your solution on this.
All right.
And this way it will be much easier, much simpler for you to act in this situation. You will not be scared of maybe drastic
actions.
You will not be scared of this.
I'll give you 5 more minutes. Try to come up with some kind of conclusion.
You may be able to see the conclusion.
Moving towards the future, okay, thank you. See the world business planning evolving
towards the future. How do you see the role of business planning evolving in entrepreneurial ventures? With the advanced technology. So let me read it again. Towards the future, how do you see the role of business planning evolving in the entrepreneurial?
Well, we can talk about the
advancement of technology, for example. Technology and changing market dynamics.
I understand planning in a way that you open your mind and you see opportunities when you plan. But then when technology and make our business plan, then it's not like opening your mind. So that's why I'm against planning still.
So we're going to see this.
Especially in this industry, everything changes too fast, too rapidly. It's really
AI.
Even
past,
if plan, maybe
usually,
something.
Let's say in the past, if you
otherwise,
wanted to set up a
really
t-shirt business, you would need to hire designers, you would need to, plan out the printers.
Yeah, well,
right now, a lot of the stuff that you can outsource printing to a different country,
all the events,
you have technology of generating images that go into t-shirts, all you have to do is maybe like log into Photoshop and just type in some funky text.
AI,
so the importance and the criticality of the planning for human has become less
as
technology enables you to take on less financial risk.
Okay, good.
If we keep on doing it, then I think
just
having doing the business plan the way we're doing it might be a more
well, where will I print it? Foreign country.
But other than that, I
plan.
Doubt that it will show up.
Just describe a business plan, roughly.
The technology, this is in AI and stuff like that, will help their like actually writing process or making maybe the plan clear. You have to have your own like thoughts first, and then you can use it to like make some visualized data automatically.
Yeah, it's like what you said. You have to need to have idea first. That's why we say it's important to test that idea.
Well, how many of you have written a business plan?
Maybe you have an unforeseen event experience can help out.
We can't say that.
Well,
or on that's why we're engaged.
The question continues: is writing a business plan a good course exercise?
Welcome.
So one last question.
Yeah. We're about to wrap up the debate, so you can just start.
And follow-up question, is writing a business plan good?
Take a seat somewhere.
So let's first vote for the first one. How many of you have written a business plan?
Personal judgment. I don't think any class is really just, you know,
like,
you make that up. So all the class
at a school,
like, no matter how much
or,
time you give in
like
a class,
for
a
religion,
and the answer is that this plan can only be acted out in.
Yeah, okay, so 50-50. And then
I've
got one
as
an exercise at school. Do you think that's a good exercise? Please vote thumbs up
like,
or then thumbs
you
down
if
you
just some imaginary
if you
think.
Thing
that
okay.
You are supposed to write the business plan for. I think that's not a
so
great
have,
idea because you
yeah.
don't really have
two
kind of motivation
which
to do
are
actually.
Who are thinking
but
if
you
yes
the,
and then okay
the
so why
like,
why it's why
you
get
start
it starts with
actually then
you
like
because I know your experience but you actually.
Yeah.
That's all.
Question mark.
In my case, I don't think it was very.
So you're done.
Yes, we're done.
I don't think.
Let's give this group one or two more minutes.
That's my joke.
Okay.
The either
perspective have more merit.
Yeah.
Depends on the subject. But no.
In
so,
all
no,
they all have. No, you cannot mean
yeah.
a you didn't realize everything implies, and you say, okay, my idea was, I need to get something else done, you know? So, if it's, of course, a good practice, but it's not really, you don't know if it's feasible or not.
Okay.
So, you corroborate that.
So,
is this
the right
business
plan?
No,
if
we don't have a business already.
There's no point
planning.
I can disagree with you.
Yeah, okay.
You
yeah.
just say that was your whole plan.
Yeah, this
is
also like
an
anonymous answer.
Then
even if
you
would have
never
write but then, and then you were towards it.
But if you have like a stupid idea that you don't believe in, then writing a business plan is
like a business plan. For a course, for a university course,
so
but I think it's good to practice, and at least you're like familiar with the thinking process. And like,
it was so fast that I had one.
Of course, I don't think it's like super realistic, but I think it's a useful exercise for practice.
Good. We are also done.
All right. Great. Did either of the perspectives have more merit? Or was it pretty even?
They had very, very good arguments, both of the teams. So at some point, it was a bit heated. but no, I think which was fun to see in the end, that when we were putting a thumbs up or a thumbs down, like where there is a good exercise to write a business plan at school or not, and the majority said no, it's not. but then we had two votes that said yeah towards it and one in the middle. So then what I found it very interesting was that without any, because all of us have done once, so without doing it, we wouldn't know what we're talking about, but we have done it already. So then, I mean, it's a good knowledge to have that, and also inclusionary framework. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I wouldn't write a business plan if I were to start a business.
No.
I would just make like sketch on an napkin and go and do it. But I still think it's a good exercise because you can't do this kind of like in class. It's very difficult to get people to actually go and do it. So it's kind of like a second best option for that. Antanas.
For example, we did an organizational design that we have to make. I think you were in the class as well.
Yes.
When we did the business model canvas.
Mm.
This, for example, thing was a good exercise because it's something you can do quick.
Mm.
It's not a full business plan, but you get like a grasp of an idea. And it's not a waste of time. It's, you know, it's quick and easy, but an actual business plan, because it takes many work hours. And if you work like for a week as an assignment, you don't know if it's feasible or not.
All right, let's start. Let's get to that point. Let's start putting points for and against. So the moderators, would you step up and start filling in what kind of points for and against there were in the debate. Do you need a desk or a computer?
Do you want me to hold it?
So write 1 point for and 1 point, 1 point for first, and then 1 point against. Yeah, the first point, planning takes time. This is the most important point against planning. Like, if planning was free, then we should plan like years and years and years. But you can, that is, there's an opportunity cost to planning, and this is the important thing. So if you plan, you are not doing. Every time, every second that you are sitting next to your computer typing a plan is not time talking to a customer or developing your product or service. So this is the most important claim against planning. So it's always good to have an initial plan. That's a bit ambiguous. Can you explain that?
It's kind of a guideline when you create a business plan, and then it kind of steers you in the right direction.
So the point is that you need to have some kind of an idea.
Yeah, and then you can edit it as you go.
Yeah, if you are starting solo, you can have the plan within your head, but you still have a plan. If you are starting out as a team, you at least need to have some kind of conversation to decide where the company is going, what is your business idea, what are your values, like do you want to grow fast and sell the company, or do you, for example, want to be a socially responsible company that develops menstruation cups and just change the world instead of making a lot of money. And it's a very good idea to write these down. So that is the point for planning. So it's, yeah. Okay, go ahead. I'm not going to steal your discussion in Italian.
I can elaborate this.
Mm-hmm.
So you need a plan when entering to a room, a roadmap. So we were talking about, for example, military, when the CIA and whatever is entering to a room. So you need a plan. And you need to have all these scenarios, what's going to happen in your head. So without planning, you haven't prepared yourself. What could be the potential, like, pitfalls or so? So that's why you need sort of a roadmap to have an idea.
Yeah, in the military, actually, the role of planning is a bit different. So or it varies between different armies, but some armies more rely on just telling the troops what is the intent of the commander, so what the commander wants to accomplish, and then it's up to the troops to decide how to do it. And then the troops can do different levels of planning, like you have an have an emergency plan, which means that you just cook up something within an hour. If you have to go and attack right away, you implement that, and then once you have that done, then you do the like planning, and you keep on planning until it's time to go. So even there, the plans vary a lot. So there might be just the statement of intent, then there's the emergency plan, which is kind of sketch on napkin, then there's the full business plan, which you prepare while you wait for the actual order to go and attack. Yeah, so, but it's useful to have some kind of roadmap on what to do. It doesn't have to be a full business plan. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, the business model is more important for us to have before the actual planning stage. So it's better to know what you're doing and then define how you're going to do it.
Yeah, but wouldn't doing a business model, wouldn't that be a plan? When you because you need to track it on somewhere, like if you have a team, you cannot really have a business plan, business model, without doing some planning and writing something down.
Yeah, but so, it doesn't have to be a whole business plan with like multiple pages and like a whole.
That's true.
Book.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be a whole book.
Yeah.
And some companies actually, how they do it is that they first develop some kind of business model, like sketch on back of a napkin, and then later on they write a business plan explaining what they did. And then they go with that business plan and for example, present that to venture capitalists. There is one stock-listed company in Finland whose CEO interviewed like way back, right after the IPO, and we discussed about strategic planning in small companies, and he told that they had like no documents, and only when they were looking for venture capital funding, they had to actually come up with a proper plan. Proper plans are also, they might not be required by venture capitalists anymore, but for example, if you apply for a bank loan, they might require a business plan with certain elements. If you apply for public financing, there might be some elements. Yeah, so that perspective is certainly valid. Do first, then write the plan. Okay, what other points?
You kind of took my point, but I want to write it down.
Okay, sure.
Okay,
you go first then.
Financing requires a thorough business plan, excluding competition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's not always required.
But often, most cases.
Often, but there's actually there's a study that came out last year that looks at venture capitalist funding in the United States, and they found that whether the company had written a full business plan or not, did not explain whether they got funding or not. So they will you can apply funding also with a pitch deck. And if you look, for example, what different platforms that provide funding for companies, like crowdfunding platforms and Finnish Business Angel Network, for example, Finnish Venture Capitalist Association, when you express interest to those platforms of getting financing or funding, then what they require actually now is more of a pitch deck now than a business plan. So it's moving more toward pitch decks than having a proper plan. Some companies might require a business plan. It might be that you get money with your pitch deck, and then you have to prepare a full business plan in the part when the company does due diligence on you. So it might be that the funding decision has been already made, but then the company, the venture capitalist or the business angel wants to see that plan just for due diligence before they make the final decision.
Here I wrote market changes. I mean, fast-paced environment can, that's whatever you have planned, it's already outdated because of rapid changes.
Yeah, this is the second main argument against planning. So there's so much uncertainty involved in entrepreneurship that if you do a plan, the plan will fail anyway, and you have to do something else, adjust it. So why bother writing a big plan in the first place? And this is more about an argument towards slider forms of planning instead of having a full business plan.
Okay.
Yeah, next point. Just pick one of the more important ones.
Visibility and an order of visibility, fancy.
Well, only fear lacking visibility, that's for planning or against planning?
I wrote it for planning, but I don't know, maybe I wrote it in the wrong notes. Because, Anton, as you said, right? Didn't you?
Yeah, regarding the class exercise.
Ah, yeah, true. Oops, okay, so, yeah,
I mean,
sorry.
You can put it in the middle.
Yeah.
In the middle?
Yeah. Well, we can talk about the business plan as a class exercise in a moment. So, against planning.
A strict plan leaves no room for creativity and possibilities that may come up as you go.
Yeah, planning can be constrained for two reasons. One is that if there are multiple people involved, like a team, then if there's a disagreement with the team, then it's just easy to fall back to the plan. And it's also, if you have a plan, that's kind of like a default option for what you do. And then you can be lazy and not make, like, think it through if you have a plan that you can follow. So that's a good one.
I can now, this was rather for the last question, but then regarding to add, I mean, it's related to the industry, for instance. Mm-hmm. I mean, for some industries, it's more vital to actually have the planning than for others, and that's why, I mean, it's like a very typical, like, let's say that I want to set up a cafe, so it's rather fast forward than, okay, I want to create an app or software or whatever, so then...
If you want to recreate a cafe, then you need to at least do some kind of a cash flow plan. Like how do you buy the stuff and then have the place, and then how much do you need to sell every month to be able to sustain that? What way?
And also, if it's a small cafe, it's okay. It's most of your expense. But if it's a big cafe, when there is other people, when there is other interest involved, you have to make at least some financial planning. How to not to waste money and how to provide people with enough funds.
Yeah. I had a friend who wanted to do this. He did a degree in mechanical wood engineering. And he wanted to make a business... where he would make wooden frames and sell them. And he was developing all kinds of prototypes and then doing different colors and playing with the design. And I told him that, well, that's all fun, but you need to actually make a plan in an Excel sheet. How much does the product need to cost for you to be able to sell it? And after he had invested considerable time, he realized that his cost structure of making this in small batches would be so high that no one will buy a picture frame for 50 euros when you can get one for 5 in IKEA. And they're not that fancy, like you don't have a name for your brand yet. And he did not do that planning, and then his business never got off. So there's if there's a predictable... If the future is very predictable, like you're entering a market that's already been served, then at least some kind of financial plan is something that you absolutely must do. So just go and do it. Will not get you anywhere. So some kind of calculus is probably necessary, pretty much always, but maybe not a full business plan. Okay, you can take a seat. We'll have a break soon. This is a big debate. There's some debate in strategy literature on the merits of planning. It's not really whether planning pays or not, but it's how much does it pay off. Because in large companies, for reasons that we'll go through next, you have to have some kind of form of planning process. It's just not possible to run a large company without, for example, a formal budgeting process. Then, but in entrepreneurship, this is a big debate that is not yet fully resolved. There is one thing that everyone agrees, though. It is that it is the planning, the act of doing the plan, that is important and not the plan. So when you're writing a business plan, the benefit that you gain from that, it's not necessarily the document, but it's that it forces you to think through your problem in a structured way of your business model. If there's another tool that allows you to think through your business model and how do you make money, what your costs are, who's your customer, that does it with less overhead, less writing, then that's probably better for planning. And this is one of the reasons why we have business model canvas and these pitch decks. They also require that you think through the same things, but you just don't need to do as much documentation of the process. So planning is essential. Plans, maybe not as much as essential. So that's the there is an overall tendency toward not writing business plans and rather do pitch decks and do the business model canvas. The second discussion point that I wanted to have as a class is how many of you have done a business plan as a part of a course assignment? Minna, you have. Yeah, everybody. Who hasn't done? Well, you don't have a business degree. You don't have a business degree. So pretty much everyone who has a business degree has done a business plan as a part of an assignment. Is that true? Did you have a business degree?
But I've done only for the real companies and not only for the...
Oh, yeah. You've only done it for real, but not for... Yeah. How many of you have studied a business and written a business plan for that? Yeah. How many of you have started a business and not written any plans? Yeah. So you can do both. It's... the business plan is, in a way, a bit of a controversial thing as an exercise in a class. And there are two downsides for business plan, writing business plans. One is that if the course is structured around a business plan, then it easily leaves you the impression that when a person starts a company, they will always start by writing a business plan. At least that is what I thought when I came out from master's close to 20 years ago. Then the second problem with business plan is that very few of the ideas that you write business plans about are something that would be feasible, and you know that your idea doesn't make any sense, so you still have to shoehorn it into the business plan template. So it might be a bit kind of abstract and not that motivating exercise to do. The four for writing a business plan is that it forces you to think through some of the fundamentals that would be required to do a business without actually having to invest into founding it. And this is kind of one of the fours for planning. Planning forces you to think through your assumptions before you actually commit more time or money into running the business. When you go and talk to customers, when you build a prototype and go and sell it to customers, that is also one way to validate your assumptions, but it's more costly than doing a business model. It's also more effective than just armchair. A business armchair theorizing around the business plan. One point that has come up in the class before, I don't know if it came up with your in your debates, is that planning can sometimes be an excuse for not doing things. So if you feel that it's uncomfortable and you go to talk to new people who might be your customers, then you might just say that, well, I need to plan it a bit more. And then having to do a bit more planning gives you an excuse of not getting started. So this is the analysis paralysis thing. You never get to do anything because you overanalyze and overplan. Any final thoughts or questions about this debate for and against planning?
Yeah, two practicalities that I forgot to put on in the beginning of the course. Your grading will be based on the learning diary, and I'll start commenting them after today's lecture, so tomorrow. And then the deadline is, I was thinking of putting the deadline 2 weeks after the final submission. So final submission for commenting is at the end of this week, and then you would have 2 weeks to to write based on my, to revise based on my comments and put it together. But I will be away for the week on starting on 25th. So would you rather spend one additional week at Easter doing the learning diary, or do you want to have it 24th? I will start grading them on 2nd of April. So do you want to have the deadline on 1st of April, which is the second day of Easter, or do you want to have it 2 weeks, which was my original plan, Antanas?
So we're not going to get any feedback on the learning diary?
You will get the feedback for the 7 that you submitted. I'll comment them for the rest of the week.
Mm-hmm.
And then you submit the one for this week, at the end of this week. Then I'll comment them sometime like Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have one more week to put it all together. So that was my original plan, 24th. But I realized that I will be gone for the next week, so I will not be grading them before the 2nd of April.
Well, then the 1st of... So
I'm okay with the 1st.
Yeah.
Let's put it the 1st of April. I'll update it. So 1st of April, it has to be, that's the second day, that's the final day of Easter. You can, of course, submit it earlier if you want to have an Easter break. Another practice, yes?
When submitting the final full learning diary, are we allowed to make some change?
Of course. I'll comment the ones that you submitted this far. Then you read my comments. Then you check if your thinking has changed. Like in the first one, we were talking about motivations and whether you ever want to be an entrepreneur. And has your thinking evolved since then?
Where can we find the comment?
I will post it to the forum once I've come.
Okay.
Any other? I'll give you the instructions. If you want to have a great grade,
mm-hmm.
please take a look at my grading criteria, because I will grade you based on my grading criteria. And if you are not, if you don't answer, if you're missing a part that I grade, then it's going to be a zero, even if you would be great otherwise. Another practicality is that has every one of you received an email with a link to the course feedback
form?
Yes.
Yeah. I was trying to have a QR code here, but it has, the links are not personalized. There used to be like one public link. Please fill it in. And this is important for two reasons. One, it helps us to develop the courses. If you think that there's something that doesn't work, we need to know about it. And if there's something that you like, then we try to put more of that into the course. The second thing is that if we get good ratings for our courses, that helps us with the internal politics of the university. So when we have to negotiate for resources, then we can say, well, we're rated highly on teaching, so maybe we could get more teachers. So it helps the program, and it helps the individual courses if you get good feedback. Right. If you get bad feedback, then that only helps the courses, it doesn't help the program, because the program might get less resources, but the courses will know what to do better. Please fill it in. You can do it like in the next couple of weeks. If you need more time, like the extension to the deadline, then I can grant that for you, but it doesn't take that long to do. So you can do it, for example, next week. All right. Let's look a bit of the theory, and planning is basically, the purpose of planning is not necessarily to produce the plan as we discussed, but it is to kind of go through your thoughts. How many of you have ever thought that you have some kind of great idea, and then when you start writing it down, you realize that it wasn't that great after all? Yeah, so... That's what planning does for you. It allows you to more critically evaluate your ideas, because we have these half-baked ideas that come to our heads all the time, and only after you start writing it down, you really think it through. Or you have a conversation about it, that's another way of thinking it through. Either way, planning happens and planning crystallizes your thinking. Planning also produces plans, which can be useful. And for example, when you present your business to somebody. The key thing about planning is this theme that has been going through the course, book, and we have these two perspectives we have the prediction perspective entrepreneurship, which means that you kind of like already see the outcome that you want to achieve. For example, I want to start a new cafe, and you know kind of like the market, and then you just think what needs to happen for that outcome to be realized. And then you start gathering the resources, you build a plan, you execute on the plan, and then the outcome comes there as an effect. And then we have the creation approach, which means that you kind of don't necessarily know what is the outcome, but you start with that kind of faint idea. You start with what you have, and then you build on what you learn. And this is a very good, for example, for businesses that are very novel, like Airbnb is the kind of idea that you don't have an outcome, that you have a global brand or global website where people can rent apartments from others, but it's more like it's a small-scale idea that builds on itself. Planning relates to which of these approaches you take in an obvious way. So if you are more of a creation person than a planning person, then doing extensive planning is probably not that great of an idea. But if you are fairly sure that you know what kind of business you want to have, there is not that much uncertainty, then doing a bit more planning would make a lot of sense. So how the creation of the planning approach typically works, how we present it in textbooks, is that we have some kind of opportunity that we spot. So the opportunity exists there for us to grab. Then we evaluate the opportunity. We identify that this is an opportunity for us to act on. Then we do a plan, get resources. Then there is a feedback loop. So we raise resources, we develop solutions, and then we enter into a commercial marketplace. And then we adapt the business plan. So even with this causation or prediction approach, there is some kind of iteration going on. Then the effectuation approach, which is very visible in, for example, the Betavoo case, it works differently. So you start by thinking, what do I want to do? What do I can do? And then you interact with other people, like Scott's study showing and presenting his prototypes at different fairs. And then you get new means, like you get new connections. Someone designs you. Someone says, okay, I'll start building the packs for you. I'll make designs for you, like I like marketing. And then you have new goals that you have for meeting others, and then you can enter into new markets. So this is more of an iterative approach, and it's a lot about interacting with other people. And there is no like explicit thing of this is what I need. It's more like this is what I have now, and what can I do with these things that I have. When you go with this approach, less planning is needed. In practice, It's hardly ever, you know, these extremes. So it's somewhere in between. So even if you go with the full effectuation approach, there's always some planning to do. At least, like, if you go to talk to a customer, you have to book that into your calendar. So at least you have that kind of short-term plan. You need to do budgeting as well. So even if you don't have a big grand plan what you want to do, you need to keep track of how much cash you have, how much cash is coming into the company, and how much cash you're spending. Otherwise, you run out of money, and if you run out of money, you go too much on negative, then you are going to fail. You're going to go to bankrupt. All right, so the overall thing is that regardless of which approach you pick, there needs to be some kind of plan. And typically, it's difficult to plan unless do planning, unless you also produce some kind of a plan. So just planning. Has any one of you ever done any really great plan without writing anything down?
In my head, I do all the time planning.
But with other people.
Ah.
Yeah, I've done also planning in my head,
But if I plan in my head, I still write it down. Like if I have a holiday plan, I need to write it down. Otherwise I cannot plan like things for every week. I have to plan, write it down like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. I might have a rough idea, but if I want to have like book some things, then I typically write down.
And honestly, back in the US, maybe it's just a culture thing, but I would often just communicate with my friends about, okay, we're going to go somewhere, and we wouldn't write it down. We would just have a mutual understanding through proper communication of what we're going to do, how long we're going to do it, and where we're going to go. And in a way, that's just how I've often done it, doing planning, but more verbally, and that way it can be more able to be checked.
Okay, maybe it's a generational thing, because when I do planning and with somebody else, we always like, let's take a piece of paper, just write down the back of a napkin plan, whatever it is. But when you write, plan, or do planning, even if you don't write it, it's important to understand what goes into a plan. So if we have some kind of plan, whether written down or not, the things that go to a plan should generally follow or address at least these four things. So, yeah.
But isn't it also like, I remember from my previous work that we had a coach and she said that based on some studies, if you write things down, the likelihood that you're completing or achieving this goal or whatever is higher than just not writing it.
Sounds reasonable. I would have to see the study, because probably heard something else, but I can't cite the study. Mm-hmm. So writing it down is one form of commitment, and when you write it down, there is kind of like a cost of writing it down. So if it feels like a bad idea when you write it down, then it's kind of like one more filter.
Mm-hmm.
So when you write something down, even if you think that it's a good idea, when you write it down, it might seem that it's actually not that bad idea. In other contexts, if you write a plan and tell everybody about that plan, then that is a form of creating, increasing your own commitment. Like if you decide that you, for example, want to start doing sports and you haven't done it, there's some research that telling people around you that I will start doing sports regularly will increase your commitment, because it kind of creates internal pressure for you. But yeah, in a plan, we need to have teams, resources, ideas, and markets. And this is something that pretty much regardless of what is the format of the plan, these elements are always there. They're always there in a proper business plan. They're always there in a business model canvas. Typically, if you write it down on the back of a napkin, then these elements would have to be there, at least at some point. Let's take a look at different forms of plans. And these are the ones that one edition of the book might have been the previous edition contained. And we had one plan, and that was the market business plan that you had to read. So which form did the market business plan take? Was it back of a napkin, sketches on a page, canvas, business brief, feasibility study, pitch deck, or business plan?
I've done different like variations of those. So I've done the business model canvas at least a couple of times, even for real business cases. Pitch decks, yes. When I was preparing for Latitude 59 back in 2018, we had to have a pitch deck. Detailed business plans.
Yeah, but the market case, it presented some kind of plan. Which form did it follow?
I wrote a combination of feasibility and feasibility study and pitch deck,
mm-hmm.
because it was in a very early stage. So it would have been crucial to, for example, write a 10-page feasibility study. Mm-hmm. Because yeah, first of all, it looks professional. Second of all, I mean, you have something written down, and then it's in the very early stages. But then regarding the pitch deck, they were looking for funding and support from the investors. That's also a very important tool, that you have something to present. Mm-hmm. You're just not going there looking nice and being like, okay, I have these kind of things in my head or so, but you actually have, you look that you're consistent and it's about to happen.
Okay. Any other views? What is the format that the business plan of Makit was, so, or their whatever document the case was? So it was, the case that was described first, and then in the appendix there was the full business plan, the full plan that they presented. So is it there's one vote that it's a feasibility study, partially a pitch deck. Are there any other Veikka?
I thought it was a business plan, but it was not like as long as the book described the business plans usually are. But I think it followed business plan like structure mostly.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with Eke. It was a business plan, but not a complete one. For example, there was missing financial data. I mean, they briefly described, you know, the summary of cash flows. Like, yes, we are in need of cash flow, and that's great. But there was no income statement, no balance sheet, no nothing. So basically, if you want to pitch something for investors, you need to provide the financial data. Like, okay, this is how much we sell, this is how much we cost, these are our projections.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say it's, something was missing there.
Okay.
Yeah, I think as we're speaking about the forms of planning, there is some forms of business plans. So some of them may include some additional information maybe on the legal aspects, for instance, for maybe some charitable company or so. In this way, it's like very highly adaptable. So I think it's up to you to decide which parts to include, which do you really need and which you don't.
Would you still say that it is a business plan?
I think so. Mm. If you consider all the aspects and you present it officially with maybe some missing points, but still, I would call it.
Okay. Any other views? How many of you thought that it was a pitch deck? Yeah, a few others, yeah. It is not a pitch deck. So pitch deck is always a presentation format. And
it had elements of pitch deck.
It had elements of pitch deck, yeah. Yeah. But it is, it had elements, so it's kind of like lighter than a normal business plan. But we'll take a look at the pitch deck a bit later today. And it's actually a pitch, it's a presentation that you give, like a short presentation, a pitch deck is there to support that presentation. And I analyzed some data for a research project. We analyzed pitch decks from a crowdfunding company. So they specifically tell companies who look for funding that they want to have a pitch deck. And then there were a few documents, and then that looked like the market business plan. The company basically said that they're not going to process those because their investors want to see slide decks, and they wouldn't consider them as a business deck, a pitch deck. So it is a business plan, not the most in-depth one. And pitch deck is something really that is there for pitching, so it's meant to be presented. And then you can have in the slide notes some explanations. And Janette pointed out that there are some elements of a feasibility study. So what would be the purpose of a feasibility study?
To test.
What would you test within a feasibility study?
For instance, the whole feasibility of the idea, because if you, for instance, go for a check and you realize that we are completely off. For instance, we had a plan, you had research, you had a preliminary product, but when you test it, you realize that in fact, in a market, for instance, it worked completely differently. So maybe some deformation, maybe some complete
I don't know, from the temperature of the region and so on. Mm-hmm. So it really depends on the situation. So it's needed to be tested in certain points.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they included a lot of information about the markets that they had already tested in a way. They had done interviews with local people, with Kenyan women, about the adoption of the product. They knew something about the legal barriers of starting a business in Kenya. So there were lots of elements of feasibility study, but there were also elements that don't really belong to a feasibility study, like explanation of the team, something about the finances or future growth. So it was more of a business plan. What is a business brief then? So what is the format of a business brief? Is it a presentation or is it a document? Is it a Word document or PowerPoint presentation? This is a Word document. This is a PowerPoint presentation. This can be both or either. What is the business brief? Is it a Word document or a PowerPoint slide?
I think it was...
That were people raising their hands. But yeah, go ahead.
No, it's fine. They
yeah, go ahead, you started already.
I think it's if we took a pitch deck and just converted it into a Word form, like it would probably have this it would have the same elements, like value proposition.
Michael.
I mean a business brief is more of just like a down and dirty initial overview of the business, and as it says in the book, it's not too time intensive and it's more of just something that you do to get it out there and get your ideas out there without thinking too deeply or spending too much time on it. And it's important, very important for just sort of like brainstorming, I would say, at least to a degree, and getting your ideas out there and potentially letting other people kind of critique your ideas if you want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's like pitch deck is sometimes meant for presentation only, but this reason is meant for reading. Mm-hmm. Antanas.
As Marga said, it's basically a business plan, but just in brief, in short, with the most important details. So there is no introduction, why, who are the founders, but the core of the product itself or the business. And I think it's mostly used for if you need to inform a decision maker, so it has like 7 business briefs and it needs to get information quick. So it's for those type of people, I would say.
Yeah, it's kind of like a summary of a big business plan. It's just something to add.
Yeah, no, I just read from the book. It's typically 2 to 3 pages long document, like
written
document.
Yeah, it's like a summary of a business plan. And one of the reasons why business plans are disliked by investors is that if you are looking for an initial investor from a company, from a venture capitalist or a business angel, the business angel wants to just go through and do like an initial yes or no, and they don't want to read like an 80-page business plan to make an initial, would this fall into my scope of investment kind of decision? Michael.
So what I read though with the business plan is that for a lot of traditional investors, they actually prefer it because and especially now, most of the investors are at an older age, so therefore I feel like a business plan would actually be beneficial if you're trying to reach the people who actually have the money and the experience and the know-how.
Well, that's what the book says,
yeah.
But there's recent evidence that that is not actually what venture capitalists are now looking at. So you can apply for money just with a pitch deck, and for example, Airbnb got their first funding with just the pitch deck. Whether you have a business plan or not is not strongly associated whether you get money or not, controlling for other factors. So the form of the plan doesn't matter as much. And then what I've discussed with some investors is that they rather now prefer shorter documents instead of longer ones. Of course, when it's time for due diligence, like you already decided that if there's nothing alarming in this company, I'm going to invest, then having a full business plan might be a good idea. Mm-hmm. There's the company that I interviewed like 15 years ago, one of the Finnish technology companies that then stock listed, They had kind of like a back of a napkin plan, and then they told us after we got the decision from venture capitalists that they want to invest into us, then they actually had to do a proper plan. So it can be that you have to write it later. But yeah, sometimes for financing reasons, you need to write the business plan. So you write it for two reasons, basically. One is if you really like writing business plans, that is for some people the right way of planning. Just write like a long document. And another one is that someone who wants to finance you asked for one. How about the BMC, business model canvas? How many of you know this framework? How many of you have ever filled in a framework, business model canvas? How many of you have never heard about business model canvas? Yeah, this is a kind of like a thing. It's like a poster that has some elements that you fill in. And the advantage of a business model canvas that it summarizes all the important points that you need to consider within a business model of a company within just like a single view. And it was developed by Alexander Osterwalder, and I know his dissertation supervisor. The dissertation supervisor told me that, well, Alex was not a great researcher, but he was very good at commercializing his own ideas. And then he eventually ended up making money with his the canvas that he developed in his dissertation. Then sketch on a page is just like one page explanation, a sketch. It can be handwritten, so you can have like, where does the money come? Where do we spend the money? Kind of like flows, just a sketch on a page, and then back of a napkin is well, it's back of a napkin, like you have nothing else to write your idea, you write it on the back of a napkin. There's one stock listed Finnish company that I interviewed for a study, and then he said that they were there. Theirs was not back of a napkin, but it was written on the back of a cigarette pack. So that was his words of their first plan. So whichever planning format you pick is to some degree, what do you need the plan for? Is it to communicate your idea? Is it to establish consensus within a team, or is it just to get your own ideas clear? Any questions about the different types of plans? We'll take a look at pitch deck and business plan in a moment. Yeah, here's an example of a business brief. And this is from the book, so there's like a few sentences about each topic: value proposition, market, customer, then what has the company done, and then what the team. Why is the team important?
Wasn't it that like venture capitals usually invest into the teams rather than in the idea itself?
Yeah, teams that can execute are much more rare than ideas. So anyone can come up with the idea, but finding a guy who has an idea and can execute, that is more challenging. And also, if you think about, if you write down who's your own team, then it allows you to think about, do we have all the competencies that we need in the team? Like we did the team assignment where you were thinking about what do you have in your team that we assign based on the post-its and what is missing. So writing it down allows you to identify missing parts. And then we might have some projections in a business brief, and then some kind of quick action plan. So it's just a few pages of the fundamentals. What is the business about? Who's going to do it? How much money do they need? And what are they going to do? Then I told you about the study. So there was a study out now in venture capital. And this is one of the bigger journals in venture capital investments. They did a survey of a few hundred American startups, and then they checked whether the writing a business plan actually explained whether they got business plan funding or not. And they found that writing a business plan, if a company had written a business plan, that correlates with their intention to seek funding. We don't know whether which direction it goes, but it tends to be that companies that seek funding will write business plans more often than those who don't. And this might be because, for example, our book says that to get venture capital funding, business plan is useful. But then when it actually got tested whether whether these companies who wrote plans compared to those that had pitch decks, whether they actually got money, there was no difference. So it's equally likely that you get a money based on just a deck compared to a full business idea. That might indicate that in future, the business plan might be going away in favor of the other formats of planning. Like, you don't want to read a full book if you just need information that you could, for example, have in a brief summary. Then we have the question of planning, or just, that's the forms of planning. Any questions about the different forms of planning? Is this all clear? And now we have the question of, does planning pay off? So there are different perspectives in research. The answer seems to be that those companies that plan more will perform better. And there was this meta-analysis. So meta-analysis is a study that combines results of multiple empirical articles. So this study looked at 183 different study samples, and they found that these companies of all size, they found that corporate planning, regardless of the format, the more planning you do, the better the performance, and regardless of how progress was measured. So it was a very high-level study. And they also found, so this is the results table, they found that planning, so this is the correlation between planning and performance, they found that the correlation between planning and performance was smaller for small organizations than for large organizations. So small companies don't benefit as much from planning as large ones do. What might explain the difference? Any thoughts? Why do large companies benefit more from planning than smaller ones? Antanas.
Because in smaller companies you have, I would say technically, less people involved, so the control span is better. If you're a multinational corporation with thousands of employees and there is no plan, it's going to be, well, organized chaos, I would say.
That is true. So planning is one form of coordinating an organization. We'll take a look at how planning actually happens a few slides from now on. But in large corporations, there's like a strategy that the company makes, and then that trickles down the organization, and then people will know what to do. So this is not all organizations work that way, but in many large organizations, there's like a big plan and then smaller sub-plans for different departments, and then everyone knows what to do. If you don't have a plan, then it's not possible to coordinate a large organization simply by the leader being there and motivating the people. You need to have some structure. Smaller organizations, like if you have an entrepreneurial team of 10 people, that is small enough that the CEO can actually steer people, like tell them what to do on a daily basis. And there's no need for like planning to drive the action.
So you can say planning is some sort of control as well.
Well, it's more of a, like if you think about
framework.
I would not say control, because controlling means that you monitor feedback and you adjust. But it's more about command. So if you think about,
I mean, if I may elaborate more control and sense of, you have a corporation of 1,000 staff members and you plan the next 2-3 years ahead with a strategy. And of course you have the CEO, you have the board of directors, but then you have the division managers, have the sales managers, the, you know, the hierarchy. And I would say that if you have a plan, you can you have your also this working hands basically that help ensure the control of implementation of the plan.
Yeah, it's a more of a coordination mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
So, and of course you can check if things are going according to the plan, and then adjust. That would be a way of control. So control means like that you are adjust.
Yeah, it's like the method of control points, where you set some points, you don't set a certain
target.
Plan. Not exactly, because there was some difference between them. So you set a control point, and at that point you check other factors which inside the team. So where did you overachieve, for instance, where did you underperform?
Okay, but this is one, it allows coordination. So that's one reason. What other reasons there might be why smaller companies don't benefit as much from planning as larger companies?
I mean, I guess it's just, and I'm not sure if this has been similarly touched on previously, but I do feel like there's ease of transfer of communication. I mean, with smaller companies, you know, if you can just talk about it and because with a larger company, it has to be planned. Because you have so many people. With a smaller company, you can just say, okay, such and such do this, and make sure to get that done. And you can directly oversee the outcomes of your advice and your plan, whereas in a larger company, you can't just directly oversee it. You have to have a much more detailed plan.
Yeah, so it works both ways. So you can think of a plan as something that is made on the top, and then it guides the action from the bottom. But in large corporations, when you do strategic planning, there is typically this kind of information collection stage where you collect information from the organization, the information flows up when plans are updated, and it's a coordination mechanism also the other way. So this is the second reason why planning is important for large corporations. In smaller corporations, the CEO knows what's going on. But if you think about big multinationals, like Nokia, they might have like 5 layers of organization or even more.
Mm-hmm.
The CEO doesn't know what the sales guy does. The CEO doesn't know what the engineer does. In smaller companies, if you have 10, 20, 30 people, the CEO can know every single person individually. I remember when I was talking to Risto Siilasmaa, who is who founded F-Secure. We were working on something together back in the day. And he told me that when he hired a new person, he used to always greet the new person by himself, and then introducing that person that this is, I've never been to this big of a company. So he only worked for one company, it was the biggest company ever when there was a new person coming, and he kept up this up to until like 150 people or so, and after that it became impossible to remember everybody's name. So then you need some coordination mechanism. Now of course it's like a 1,000 people company now, so it doesn't work like that. Then there's a third reason why larger corporations might benefit more from planning than smaller ones.
Adaptation.
What do you mean by adaptation?
When there's coming changes, obviously for the smaller company, I mean, those can be done way faster.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than for bigger companies. I mean, like if you implement something new, I mean, first in bigger corporation, normally you test it, then you analyze it, then you might need to test it again, change it to a department, and let's say that they're driving new software, they're changing CRM system, so then obviously that's way bigger and complex.
Yeah, you're right about it. I didn't have that in my mind, but you're right about it. So larger corporations to adapt, you can't just have like a CEO changing that from now on. We're going to target the new market, but it really takes more effort to steer a big boat.
I was thinking, bigger companies usually have more costs and more revenue and like financial stuff, so maybe planning covers that and all the aspects of that side more. And in smaller companies, of course, you should plan all the budgeting, but it's more prevalent in bigger
Mm-hmm. That's true. So it's more complex, you need more planning. What I had in my mind was that in large corporations, the future is typically more predictable. So Nokia can predict, I don't know why I was using Nokia as an example. They can predict how many deals they will do in 3 years. They can predict how many factories they have in 3 years. But it's very difficult for a smaller startup to predict like what's going to happen in half a year from now. You just don't know, particularly if you're launching a new product. So if there's more predictability, more stability in the environment, then it's easy to plan.
Yeah, I think it's because for small businesses, there is much more disruptive events that can happen daily. And for bigger companies, these disruptive events are just like one of a million. So it's possible to predict at least some of them. Mm-hmm. But for small businesses, it's impossible. Just a fire. Or maybe anything can happen for a small business that will change everything.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on. Let's move on to how entrepreneurs plan then. And this, based on a study that I did, I really like talking about my research, and I like the fact that I can present something that I've done for you. So this is not my study. This is from Grant's paper. So this is a classic study from 2003, and Grant was studying how large oil corporations make strategy, and he studied 8 companies, and then this is his sketches of these strategy processes of these 4 large ones. There were 3 other large ones, but you know all the companies. And then he summarized that this tends to follow always kind of certain kind of framework. So there's a cycle where you collect, you do some kind of initial forecast and assumptions, and then you draft plans based on those assumptions. You might have consultants involved here. You might hire McKinsey to develop your report on how is the telco market in China going to develop. And then the strategy department that does this work then communicates the potential plans up. Then it goes to budgeting. Then it goes to corporate planning, so that is like the full corporate level planning. Then it goes to approval by board. Then it starts so this is kind of like going up. Then board is the highest decision maker in a business organization. Then it trickles down to annual performance targets of the divisions. Then there is follow-up of the performance, and then it repeats like every other. So this is like an annual cycle. And these are big processes, like when a big corporation does update their strategy, it can take a couple of months when they do it. So it's typically done on an annual basis, and then the CEO can announce the new strategic decisions in a letter to shareholder, for example, shareholders when they release the profit and loss statements. I wonder how many. Are those all yours?
Yeah.
So how does planning in smaller corporations differ from this one? So in large corporations, we have a strategy department that does some kind of planning. They might have scenarios that consultants develop for them. Then it goes to the board for decision making. There's a strategy plan, and then there's budgeting. Then there will be annual targets for business units that develop their own plans, performance appraisal, and then you repeat once a year. Is that what small companies do?
I think they have more rapid changes. What I would think that they're changing it more often. Because they see, okay, if we failed, we need to change the plan. Rather than bigger companies, they forecast up to 10 to 20 years. Whereas for smaller companies, it's rather looking like maximum 1 year, maybe 5 years. But 5 years is still very long for a smaller company.
Yeah, the planning horizon for a startup is a lot shorter.
than for larger corporations. So large corporations, they might have scenarios for the next year, for 3 years, for 5 years, and for 20 years, for example, depending on the industry. If you are a small technology startup, you don't do that kind of, their planning horizon is shorter. But if we think about the planning process, do you think that, that smaller companies follow this kind of annual cycle? Like when you're very, yeah.
Well, within the company that I work in, it's one of, on the smaller side, the planning typically happens on a more quarterly basis, where there's like a board level 10 meeting, and then they assess the industries that we want to work in.
But there tends to be like a regular planning cycle in smaller companies.
At least I would say some smaller companies would just do this, but have scaled down.
Yeah.
They would just do a very, very scaled down version of this without all the bureaucracy parts of it, I would say, potentially.
Yeah. So you might not have a strategy department that makes you scenarios and makes you plans that the board then approves. But this kind of... What's so funny?
Nothing. She was sniffing some weird thing, so I was asking her, what was that?
All right.
Yeah, no, wrong mistake.
Interesting. Yeah, small companies do plan the same way, just scale down. And if it's a rapidly evolving business, you might have a quarterly cycle, but most often it's a one-year cycle. And this is something that I studied. So we did this study of like when I was in Aalto, and we picked companies. We picked companies. I think it was six companies that were able to grow a lot, and then we picked six companies that were very similar to the original the grown companies who didn't grow. Now I can't stop thinking about you.
It's energy, so it's a legit thing.
And what we found, I have to try, give them a try.
Yeah. Okay,
so when you're falling asleep, then it's asleep. Yeah, we'll have a break soon, don't worry.
She's right.
Yeah. So what we found in our study was that this kind of like cycle was present in all companies, and if nothing else, then at least a small company does a budget. So budget is done every year, and then it has to be approved by the board. So that is at the minimum. Some other companies, they had an annual strategy day, for example, where they were collecting everyone together for one day. So it's not like you have this 2 months of strategy information collection period like you had in a large corporation, but it might be like a one day where you ask everyone, like, what are the issues that we should focus on now? And then the management team might have a meeting, then they make some decisions, and then you have communicated to the staff. But it follows the same template. But we also found out that a lot of companies, smaller companies, do this kind of informal planning. So in large corporations, we typically think that there's a degree of how much planning is being done, and this is done in the formal process that runs annually. But in these smaller companies, they have the annual process, but they also found that they do planning informally. So strategic planning, strategic decisions are not always made within the planning process. Like it's often done in larger corporations. But it's like people talking in a coffee room, talking about a new business opportunity, like a new customer segment coming up, and then the CEO starts thinking about it on the spot. So the planning, if you leave it to the actual, just the annual process, it's not very effective. Then what we found also with effectiveness of these companies is that those companies who did more informal planning, they tended to be higher growing companies. So we had these larger companies, so that's in quote slide. I've lost one of my slides. Anyway, the point was that the companies that grew more, they had budgeting process. But the budgeting and strategic planning process tended to be focusing more on documenting things that had already been decided. And in a lot smaller, in those companies that did not grow, what they did was that they used the annual process for driving the decisions. And using like a process to drive the decisions, small companies does not work for two reasons. One is that if you have like an annual strategy day, then you are thinking about strategy once a year, and that is not sufficient for a small company. And the other thing is that it's not adaptive enough. So you need to be able to adapt to the environment quicker than what like a one-year planning cycle would require. But we also found that these companies that grew, they tended to then move toward more formal planning process. When a company grows, they need to adapt a process for decision making for two reasons. One is external pressure. There was one company who said that they really don't want to formalize. They like to plan their strategy over a beer, but then the venture capitalist who invested a few millions into the company told that the company really needs to act like an adult company, and they cannot plan their strategy over beer. There must be some kind of process that the venture capitalist can follow, because that is what they're used to. The second one thing, reason is that when you add more people to the organization, then you need to have the coordination that proper planning process provides. So you can no longer rely on one person being the great leader who manages the work and makes sure that everyone is in line. So our main finding in planning is that small companies do planning, and they tend to have this kind of cycle of annual cycle of updating things, but it's more about, in successful companies, your annual cycle is more about documenting what you've already done and decided, whereas in large corporations, the decisions are made within the cycle. And a lot of planning takes place elsewhere. It doesn't take place during the annual planning cycle, but coffee room or beer, whatever. And then when you grow, then you have to formalize the course. All right, we need a break. You start sniffing stuff. So be back in 12 minutes. So let's see.
My name is Veronica D'Souza. I'm the co-founder and managing director of Ruby Cup, and we work with menstruation. I'm proud and grateful to announce that we've received $160,000 in grant money from the Swedish Development Agency for the Innovations Against Poverty grant. And I'm here today to ask you if you want to help us match the grant of $160,000 in philanthropic grants. In addition to that, we need $300,000 in investments in the future. So, today, 1 billion women and girls struggle every month because they can't afford sanitary pads, and they stay home from school and work, and this results in approximately 20% loss of their school and work time. Menstruation is an overseen problem. It's a taboo. They don't raise their hand and say, hey, we need help. This is a Ruby Cup. It's reusable for 10 years, and this is our product. And you use it like this. Fold it, insert it into the body. It opens up, collects the blood. You empty it, reinsert it. And after your period is over, you boil it for 5 minutes so it's sterilized. Then you store it, and next month you take it out again. So basically a year ago, my two partners and I from Copenhagen Business School were all users of menstrual cups, and we decided if we prefer this, why not bring it to developing countries? So we set up our own production, moved to Kenya in September, did a feasibility study and a pilot with great and positive results, and are right now expecting our first 10,000 products to come into Kenya. We're selling it through a direct sales model, a Tupperware model, where we train women who then go out into the villages. They sell the product and educate their peers. This way we solve the problem, we generate income for the women in a very environmentally friendly way, and we increase education. So in 5 years, we'll reach 1 million women and girls who are today struggling. We'll have a revenue of $4.5 million, and at the same time we'll have saved the planet for a potential waste of billions of pads. So to sum up, I have a table out there, and I would love to continue the conversation about menstruation with any of you who will be interested. We need partners, we need connections, we need advisors, and we need money. So thank you very much for paying attention, and I look forward to meeting all of you.
All right. Would you invest into this company based on the pitch and the business plan?
No.
No.
Okay, you're pointing to someone else.
Yeah, I've asked, but you started already. Yeah.
The thing is especially after reading the business plan and hearing this, it seems a bit too, a bit too rosy, like painted to, they sort of like paint a picture of this incredible sort of company. I get it, that's what they have to do to get the investors to get to know them. However, I do think that a lot of what she was saying in there did not nearly cover the issues covered in the business plan, and furthermore, when talking about how much they expect to have in the future, from reading the article, it definitely showed that at least the data, from what I could tell, there wasn't enough data to support these huge claims.
Yeah, it seems like they just draw the hockey sticks for a case study or something like that.
Yeah, I will consider to invest it, but what I read from the business plan was that they didn't mention any challenges, almost at all, so that was one area that I would be interested to hear more, because they just said that everything is going to be like in a huge future for them, but they didn't mention any challenges.
Yeah. I'll let you talk in the next question.
Okay.
Yeah, because we need to move on. We're a bit late on schedule. I wouldn't invest in this either. So this is a kind of business that attracts certain kind of investors. Some people want to invest in the social responsibility ventures in the same way people would give money to charity. But purely in terms of like making money, it doesn't sound credible. I tried to look for the numbers of the company. The company is running. So they have a website and you can order their products. And when you order one of their products, they will give out one for free in a developing country. So they are still running the model. But I couldn't find any revenue information how much money they're actually making. They got investment. They got 160,000 with approximately 1.5 million euro valuation, which is pretty, quite a lot considering what the company is doing. But I don't know, it's still running. It's a proper business. We don't know how large it is. Now, let's focus on the business plan. And the business plans serve a purpose. And form groups of about three, at least as many different purposes that this business plan is probably used for. And then we'll start filling the mind map over there about what is the purpose of this business plan. I'll give you 5 minutes to list things with a friend. If you want to have, there's post-its, you can make notes on the post-its. We'll use post-its a bit more later today, but they're for notes. So groups of about three, what are the different purposes that this plan might serve? So what kind of purpose is, why is this written in the first place, this business plan? Krista.
One thing is to get funding.
Yeah, that's the obvious thing. So can you write it down here?
Yes, I can.
To the mind map. Yeah, Micah.
Yeah, so what we did, I remember in the book, in the article, it talked about how they specifically... Well, they do not want to be just some not-for-profit place, because there are so many of those. They want to be a place that a company that will make profits, but yet also do something good. And I feel like with this, they're trying to make themselves look good in order to get that profit. And so I would say their base goal, as Chris said, was to get funding. Mm-hmm. However, they did this to make themselves look good enough to get said funding. They sort of wanted to show that, you know, oh, we're not like all the other companies. We're one that's doing something ethical, in a sense.
Okay, so that's kind of like a sub-theme of yeah. Getting funding. Write it down. What other reasons, Antanas?
No, yeah. actually proposed the to get the self-evaluation of the whole project, to get the fresh and full perspective on operations, because you summarize what you've done so far and what you plan, and you know, it's not just like one streamline, you have to consider everything that happened.
So particularly the feasibility study that they did is critically evaluating assumptions. Right, is that what you mean?
So we're mentioning everything that happened, not just only feasibility, how they studied, what they did, and what they're planning to do.
So critically evaluating your ideas. Yeah, write it down. That might be, that's not the part of the teaching note, but that's certainly something that it will accomplish. What other reasons might this have been written for?
Okay, we put, to have guidelines and sort of agreement between, for example, founders, or then just with yourself.
Alignment between founders. Yeah, write it down. What does alignment between, what kind of alignment issues might there be with this kind of business idea? So where would they need to find alignment? In Kohan. Eric.
Like potential business partners, like market alignment.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but I think they didn't, they like, as they were constructing this plan, like she mentioned that they already did some sort of pilot within Kenya.
Mm-hmm.
So they already have this alignment, which I think it's quite important.
It is important in this case because they're do you have something to add? Or is there some scratching your head?
Well, I wanted to, but I didn't finish.
Perhaps they need a value alignment with their future investors.
Yeah, with this kind of venture, where you have both social purpose and financial purpose, you need to have your values aligned. If one of these ladies is there to change the world, and another one is there for making a profit, then there will be a conflict eventually. So you have to align your values in social, this kind of social venture. It's very important. Another thing that you have to establish alignment here is when you think about what this venture is about and where the founders are. So this is business students in Copenhagen moving to Kenya, starting a business there, selling menstruation cups. And you probably need to ask them a few times, is this really something that you want to do? Move to Kenya instead of get a corporate job in Copenhagen. So there needs to be this kind of searching for commitment and alignment of values. It is very important that the company doesn't break down later. So what would happen, for example, if one of the founders, who is also a shareholder in the company, decides that she wants to move back to Denmark? That would be a big problem for the company. So they have to talk this through, and then the business plan, writing it, what do we really want to do, helps you to achieve the alignment. This relates back to what we discussed about the challenges in founding as a team. What other purposes? Janet?
I mean, business plan is like a business Bible. You have everything included, and you have covered like the biggest parts of the company. I mean, including the team, financials, etc.
That is what it does. But why would you need to have a business Bible? So what good would it have to have a business Bible?
It's black and white. You know, everything is black and white on the paper, and you can see it visually as well.
Yeah, it clarifies your critical. It clarifies your own thinking, so it does that. What other purposes?
I think it could also be like a form of, especially like recorded business plans,
mm-hmm.
that are on video. That could also be a form of marketing.
Mm-hmm.
And there could be two sides to it. It could be a side where, for example, there's a rise in aware consumers.
Mm-hmm.
So people who are, for example, if they see that this company is creating impact within like these different markets, they could be more willing to, for example, switch their spending from like Procter & Gamble to the smaller company. And it could also open up channels of funding from, like, maybe not venture capitalists or like these like classical channels, but like alternative ones.
Yeah, like you can get, we can add it here. I'll save time. So this can be venture capitalists and then grants. So they got 160,000 euros of grants with this plan, and then they got the same amount of VC investor money. There are still important things. Why would you, if you think about the pitch that we heard, they were looking for money, and what else were they looking for?
Advisors.
Advisors, and what do advisors need to see?
The data to make an analysis, to give advice.
The advisors need to see something that they can give advice to. So you can write a business plan in order to get feedback from others. So there's the communication with the advisors are getting feedback. This is one thing that, because they don't have much business experience, they need feedback. Mm. And how do you get feedback? You get feedback by communicating your idea to somebody else, and then that somebody else gives you their opinion about your idea. Writing a business plan is one way of communicating your idea. Mm. Doing a pitch is another one, and having an informal talk is another one. Krista.
It's a question that isn't always used a lot that in business plan there are no challenges because I didn't see any challenges that they were like typically there's something about risks
yeah. And this didn't have any so it's a very rosy business plan. We get to the problems with this business plan in a minute.
Okay.
But yeah, it is very, it's, I think it's too positive, and it's very light on the hard data.
Yeah. Is it possible also you can find potential partner or resource by presenting your business plan?
Yeah, this is also for partners. You can send your business plan, because this, for example, they might partner with NGOs, non-government organizations, and the non-government organizations might want to see the business plan. So when you think about writing a business plan, you always need to think about what is the purpose of my business plan. Is it to communicate to non-government like charities? If yes, then you should emphasize the social mission more than the financial aspects. Is it more for venture capitalists? If yes, then you should emphasize hard data. Is it more about doing it for value alignment with the founders? Then you should write down the values and emphasize that in the company. So business plans can serve multiple different purposes. What are some of the strengths of this business plan? So anything good in the business plan? You said that you are fairly critical, some of you, but any good sides of this business plan? What does it do well, Matvei?
So they have values, so they know what they're planning to do, and they bring some social value as well.
Yeah, so we can have a strength here. So they communicate the social mission really well. Like, why is this important? I don't have enough space to write it. What other strengths does the business plan have?
They show the two path revenue stream that they have the same product price at a higher price in, let's say, the Western world, in the first world, and in the poorer regions of the planet, they sell at a low retail price. So basically, they compensate the losses for the very thin profit margin on the cheaper markets with the higher markets, so it's streamlined into one.
And this is a very common model of social entrepreneurship. You have this subsidy model where you sell your product at a loss or give it away in one market and sell it with higher markups in another market. It's also criticized because some companies kind of greenwash by doing that. If you produce unethical, like single-use fashion, and it doesn't make it ethical that you give away one product for one single or one quick fashion product that you sell. Micah. What are the strengths of this is that it really
makes the social side of the business very clear. It tells like a compelling story, and it produces and provides the feasibility study that these guys have actually thought about it. And any downsides? Krista mentioned already that there is very little negatives here, very little risks. This is of course like they need to set up a supply chain, and they have to commit to live in Kenya, and they have to, or at least they have to commit to doing business there. So there is not that many negatives. What other problems there are?
Well, they have a single product, so it's kind of risky.
Well, it is a risk of the business model, but it's not really about their business plan. And they diversify. They also have other products now. If you go to the website, you can see that they have other products that relate to female hygiene. So they are diversified. But just looking at the plan, what other weaknesses beyond not talking anything about risks? Well, this is very light on the details, the financials. So they just show these figures that they grow this much, but they don't spell out the assumptions. So where does the 5 million euro come from? So what does it mean? How much do you have to sell? How many new customers do you have? Where do you acquire those customers? So it's not really convincing because they don't explain how they get to the 5 million. They just say that, well, it goes up and then we'll break even in a few years. Eventually, they broke even because the company is still existing. But it's I looked at the company database. There's no entry for Makit that I could find. There is Rubikup is a company. And there are a few discontinued businesses called Rubikup in Denmark. And then there is one registered in UK, but there was no revenue information available. I assume that they are operating because you could buy from the shop all.
Yeah.
Any questions or any comments about this business plan? If not, this is like a fairly typical, except that it's a bit light, a bit short. An investor might want to see some kind of risk analysis and contingency plans, like what if the risk realizes, what will happen, and more data. Let's take a look at then another form of plan. So this is the Airbnb pitch deck. And so this is the presentation slide set that they used to get their first investment. And it's available on the internet. Let's take a look at what do they communicate and how and what makes it convincing. So the pitch deck, the pitch is usually like 10, 15, 20 minute presentation where you talk about the fundamentals of your business. You try to get your audience excited, and then if someone wants to invest, then you go into the talks where you look at the numbers in more detail, for example. So book rooms with locals rather than hotels. So that is clearly communicates their business idea. So that is the fundamental idea of the business. And then we have problem. So what is this business solving? They solve the idea that price is an important thing. Hotels leave you disconnected from the city and its culture. If you book an Airbnb now, this local aspect is not that much there anymore. It's more of like cheaper accommodation, like because there are people who buy apartments to rent them on Airbnb. And then there is no easy way to book a room with a local or become a host. So it's 3 points very clearly communicate what is the problem this company is addressing. Then we have what is that they want to do. And they build a web platform, and what is the value added. So why would anyone want to use this this platform? This connects really well to the problem statement. So save money, share culture, and make money when hosting. Now you can compare like what kind of
presentations you make, for example, the course on organizational design, you tend to have lots of text, and instead of having lots of text, would it make more sense to just have like a few points, and then you talk about the benefits instead of building the... Yeah.
It just appears that their baseline business plan is primarily targeting a they targeted a general dislike for the big mainstream hotel industry, and it seems like their main thing was capitalizing on people's dislike of hotels and their problems and sort of trying to fix them in their own way by promoting this very your way is best, because you get basically promoting less of a big business style and promoting more of an individual sort of connection style. And I just feel like that business plan is interesting, capitalizing on a dislike of consumers.
Yeah, the original. You don't like big hotel chains, you'd rather stay with the locals, and this allows you to do it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not anymore a reason why people go to Airbnb. It's more, now it's like, save money. How many of you have stayed in Airbnb? How many of you have interacted with the locals when doing so? Surprisingly many. Okay. So is it really a factor now? Or is it only about saving money?
It's not a factor because, in my opinion, because, yeah, the host is, like, at least in the Airbnbs where I stayed and the host was there, they were, like, usually pretty busy.
Mm.
But we're also talking about UK work culture, so...
Anyway, so it's changing. Then we have to move on to go through the pitch deck. Then what they present next is the size of the market or some data. And what they show is that there is another service called Couchsurfing, which has, it's kind of similar, but you rent couch. And they have 660,000 total users. And then on Craigslist, which is like an American place for selling and buying stuff, there's 50,000 temporary housings listed. And so there's clearly, they show that there is demand for this kind of service. If we launch it now, then we will get customers. And then they have the market size. And this is kind of like top-down valuations or top-down market sizing. Market sizing can be done in two different ways. One is that you look at what is the total addressable market. And they have it here. So total available market, how many times people spend a night outside their home in the year. So it's 2 billion nights slept outside your home within a year. So this is including hotels. And then there is a serviceable available market. So regardless of what you do, certain business travelers will always go to hotel. I would probably always go to a conference hotel when I go to a conference, even if there was a cheaper Airbnb available, because I don't pay for myself. And then, well, this is the budget. And then share of market, assuming that they will get 50% of the budget market, then that is how you come up with it. Do you see what is the difference between this 84 million potential revenue and the 5 million revenue in the market case? So the market just showed you the number, and this shows in one slide how do you get to the 84 million. So then there's source. There's the source. What is the source of this data? Source of this data. And then what is their assumption? We could debate of whether 15% or 5% or 30% is the right target for the market capture. But you can still say, okay, even if it's 5% of the that they will capture of this low-cost market, it's still like 27 million or something like that. So it's a lot of money. Then there's product. So this is what the product looks like. And they communicate that this is something that would be easy to use. So you search by city. You review listings and then you book it. The point of this slide is to communicate that this is not simply an idea. This is a concept and a product that has already been developed. So you can just go and use it. Then we have the business model. How do we make money out of the 84 million. And again, then there's assumptions. So if the total revenue is going to be 84 million, what is the profit going to be? It's going to be 25 euros per night, assuming 80 euros per night for 3 nights, to $25 per appointment. And then they base this on their own data, and then there's the projected revenue, 2.1 billion. And they're making billions already. So again, we can see here that it communicates the idea that this is going to be a lot of money, and they do it in a very, very simple way, listing their assumptions, listing their data sources. So it's very easy to buy, okay, maybe possible. And then, of course, you need to communicate how do you make it happen, which is a bit lacking in the market business plan. They just say that they're going to use this local, like, Tupperware model, where local people sell it to other locals. And then these guys list that, okay, so how do we promote their events, their partner lists, and then they use Craigslist to promote Airbnb. So there is a bit about the execution, how do you actually make it happen. And you also need to consider the competition. So the market business model doesn't really talk anything about competitions. There's really nothing negative about it. How do you compete against lower cost providers? If you are original from Denmark, how do you compete against like Chinese companies, for example? And this slide acknowledges that there are different alternative services that people might go for. The problem with existing Couchsurfing and Craigslist is that it's an online offline transaction. So you pay the person who gives you the apartment when you get the keys. And Airbnb adds an online transaction, so you pay through the platform. It's more reliable than handing cash to somebody else. And then they're more affordable than hotels that also allows you to pay online. So it combines the convenience of hotels, booking hotels online, and affordability of renting short-term from individual people using Couchsurfing. The purpose of this is to show that you understand that there are other players, so it's not like you are the only game in town, like the market business plan. Then you have, what is the advantage? Why are you going to win? First to market was the reason probably why they got so big. They are competitors, but because they are late movers, Airbnb is the biggest. There are strong network effects. If you have listed your apartment on Airbnb, it's making you money. You don't want to list it anywhere. You don't want to move it anywhere, so there is lock-in. And then value of Airbnb depends on how many people have listed their apartments. So it's very hard to start a competitor for this once it reaches a certain scale. Airbnb has the most customers who stay in apartments. If you want to rent your apartment, then you go for Airbnb. Airbnb has the most hosts, so if you want to rent an apartment, then as a customer, you go to Airbnb. So this is the first mover advantage. And then they talk about the team, who are the founders, the designers, and what is their experience. Like this developer has created a website already with 75,000 users, and so on. So they say that they have entrepreneur experience. You want to communicate that this is the team that can actually execute this idea. And then the presentation concludes with some positive reviews. What is the press talking about the Airbnb? What are they saying? They say that it's a fun service for couch surfing. Then they have users who are saying that this is a good service. And finally, they are giving out the numbers. So how much money they need. So they are looking at $500,000, and they got $600,000 with this pitch deck. So this is a really great example of a pitch deck for a couple of reasons. One is that it covers all the fundamentals that you need to have in a pitch deck. Talks about what is the product, what is the market, what is the team, how much money do you need, and then it is a very effective presentation, just as a presentation deck. Any questions or any comments about this pitch deck? They don't all look this good. So I have a few pitch decks. I have actually, I think like 800 pitch decks on my computer, so for a research project. And a lot of them look like something that would be made by students, and many of you would make better pitch decks, like filled with text, and it's very difficult to see what is the main idea.
A question?
Yeah.
This is already like 15 years old, or when was this? I don't know.
I don't remember.
But still, how has this pitching thing evolved? It is quite a new thing, like generally.
Pitching a new thing.
This kind of pitching to venture capitalists and get that kind of, this San Francisco, Silicon Valley thing. So how has this evolved in the, or has it?
Well,
big changes.
I'm not sure if there's there were pitching competitions at that point when this was pitched for investors, but nowadays there are. So opportunities to practice making pitch decks and pitching are there. We have pitching competitions here, and you can do it for fun, or you can go to a pitching competition where there are actual venture capitalists. Getting an opportunity to pitch is probably easier now than what it used to be when this was done. Other than that, I don't have much early pitch decks beyond this one, so I don't know how it has evolved, but I would assume that people have gotten better, so there are now more good pitch decks. The ones that I have are for a crowdfunding platform, and they are meant for to be understood without the person giving the pitch. So that might explain why there's so much text. But some of them, it's very hard to see what is the main point because there are so many details in the slide. What I like here is that the details are here, but they always emphasize what is the main thing that they are looking for. I don't actually, this is their revenue that they're getting. So they're making 2 million now for predicting they want to have 500,000. Any other questions? But I don't have any data. I just, based on the studies, when I prepare for these classes, I read what has been published on each topic in the last year or 2 years. I found some studies that say that business plans are becoming less important. So pitch decks are the way to go when you present to venture capitalists. But other than that, I don't know. Michael.
Would you say that Airbnb essentially has a monopoly over the vacation rentals market? Because you don't really hear about almost any other one, and yet around the world, they are the one everybody thinks of when doing this.
They don't. Because, for example, if you look at these other sites, this is off topic, but if you look at these other sites like hotels.com, mm-hmm. You can list your property in other sites as well. So I went to Ireland last summer, and I was staying in a place that was clearly a private residence, and there were some rooms that were just had a different door, and I booked through one of these websites instead of Airbnb. So they don't have a monopoly, but yes, for certain kinds of markets, they are very, very strong. So you might think that it's a monopoly, that you have no other place to list, but there are other places, yes.
Would you say, preparing a business plan, pitch deck, business brief, it really boils down to what stage your startup is in and from where you're seeking capital. Because, for example, if you go to venture capitalists, I would imagine they would want more information, more detail, or if you're taking out a loan from a bank versus if you're just, getting together with family, friends, and maybe a couple of,
It depends on the purpose of the business plan. If the purpose is to do value alignment between the founders, then I wouldn't do a pitch deck. I would do either a business plan or a business brief. Mm-hmm. that's if you think about just this writing and brainstorming, a Word document is a lot better format than a PowerPoint slide set. This is actually, if any one of you has read how Amazon runs meetings, they banned the meeting PowerPoint, and instead of meeting PowerPoints, everyone is given memos that they read in advance. They're Word documents. It's like 5-6 pages you read in advance, and no presentations in meetings, so everyone has to read them in advance. So because it's a better format for certain kind of brainstorming than the PowerPoint. But the PowerPoint is very useful for presenting to somebody. So yeah, it depends on what is the purpose of the business plan, always. There are different, some business plans are written for funding, others are just to clear a head, like what I'm actually doing. Is this feasible? I need to evaluate it critically. And others are for aligning the founders. Any other questions or thoughts? So we have two very different plans, both for attracting financing, the Airbnb business pitch deck, and then we have the market business plan. Let's have a 5-minute break, and then we'll do a course conclusion. So this is a pitch deck that I made when I was a master's student. And this is not, I did not give the presentation because Tuukka and Tommy, they were our first two hires, and they gave this presentation. So this company that they were presenting is a recruitment agency. The idea is that we were students, and we knew that companies wanted to recruit students for interns, but they had problems with finding the best ones, so they just costly for companies to find the best students. And we thought that we know who our best classmates are, and we told the companies that, well, you pay us a fee for every hour that our friend works, and then our friend will go and work for you. So we were basically a pending agency for students, and the pitch deck starts by explaining what is the mission, because this is kind of like a social venture. So the purpose of this venture was to improve the employability of students and get students professionally motivating job opportunities. And then employment and good jobs is the most important value. So the company wanted to rent out students to do various jobs, but only if the jobs are professionally developed. So we never rented the student out to, for example, a factory or a warehouse just to do that kind of job. And we also emphasize that the company is owned by nonprofit associations, and then gave some basic facts. Then we gave some short history how we ended up starting a business. So why would students start a business for running temping? And there was a company that contacted us that they would like to recruit students, but they can't do recruitments because of the law. They would have to hire those through an agency. And then we decided that we will do an agency. And we first thought we'll do a non-profit company, but it didn't work out because you need capital to run a business. And then the services, what we were doing, we did headhunting and for graduated people, and we did staffing for students. We listed some things, like we had 10 projects completed already and 4 projects in the sales pipeline. So we were basically looking for 4 people to recruit, and this pitch was to give those people who wanted to recruit. Then we are positioning the markets. So in staffing, we are higher quality than Adecco, same price. So Adecco gets you people who are low trained, and we give a fourth year, so fifth year students. And then, but the level of cost is a lot lower than consulting. So we're basically saying that these guys who we hire out, they will be consultants in 2 years. And we'll give you the fraction of the cost. And then we also thought about recruiting. Headhunting is expensive. Public advertisement is expensive.
we are low cost player in recruiting. So if you just want to hire a good guy, we'll find it for smaller cost than anyone else. Then we had explanation of the process. So customers give projects, then we look at who is the best candidate, and we give jobs to students. So that is the entire idea. And then we had a team. So Olli, me, Tomi and Tuukka, we are four people. We were part-time students. Olli was the postgraduate student. And then we were proud that our cost structure is very low because we are all students. We don't cost much. And then we discussed future directions. Where does it go? So we might go to graduate, do headhunting. We might go and expand through international student networks, or we might go and do something other than industrial management students. So this is an example of another pitch deck from like 20 years ago. So they used to be like that way back in the time. So I have also another, not just one, the Airbnb example. This is about the same time, or maybe a bit earlier than they are, Airbnb. And then we had, how do you get to know more about the company? Okay, so that is another pitch deck. So they're typically this kind of simple, where you present the fundamentals in a very clear way, and it's meant for presentation. So the normal pitch would last about like 15 minutes. But we don't have time for that. All right, let's start wrapping up the class. And the purpose of the class was to tell you what is entrepreneurship and what are entrepreneurs, how do entrepreneurs think, what are entrepreneur organizations, and at the end of the course you'd understand the basics of what entrepreneurs do, how do they think, and a bit of organizational behavior stuff, how do organizations function, entrepreneurial organizations, how do you build a team, how do you build a small organization around the team. And after the course on the individual level, you should be able to differentiate between entrepreneurial and managerial thinking capabilities, understand how thinking and mindset can be valuable for non-entrepreneurs, understand opportunity identification and creation, understand a bit about leadership, and particularly how transformational leadership is important for entrepreneurship. And then in the organizational level, know basics of organizational behavior in the context of organizational entrepreneurial organizations, understand how early organizations are formed, like teams, looking at what kind of skills you need, not getting avoiding fault lines, and know the basics of resourcing and planning in the context of entrepreneurial firms. All right, so that is my recap of the course. And just as a last thing, I want each one of you to get post-its from here and pens, or you can have the big markers, and write down for one post-it, write down three things that you found most important, something that you think will make a difference that you learned during the course. Three things that you think are interesting. Was there something that really challenged your prior thinking that you learned during the course? And then three things that you think have direct work-life applicability for you. So even if you never want to start a business or you don't want to start a business right away, did you learn some things that might be applicable? Okay, now we will continue. Pick a partner and compare your lists and come up with a consensus. So talk to the guy, appear, and come up with a consensus list of 3 points for each.
Basically just talking about how you can learn to develop a mindset which allows you to leverage your own ideas.
We're going to then do one more round of combining. So two pairs will combine into a group of four. And again, come up with a consensus of three most important points.
Mm-hmm.
Green, post-it one idea per post-it.
three points, one idea proposed, and 3 points direct work life applicability for you. Yellow post. Groups of four. This was 4 groups of 4.
We can be a 4.
Once you are done, bring your post-its to the board.
So they should be like 3x3 grid.
Okay.
No,
Angel and Vesper combined. Angel and Vesper combined.
I think it was more of a...
Yeah, I would say as well. So we'll have 2 4 interesting.
Finally, at least some of us has hope.
It's hard when you have Is it investors or a plural or
I mean, it can be in brackets.
Yeah.
It'll be similar
but I can turn it on and off. Yeah. It's just really slowing it
down. No. That's our importance.
Okay.
So this is the Finnish Business Angel Association.
Yeah. Okay, the thing before it's not out of there. I thought there's only Shark Tank.
Yeah.
And, if you stumble upon a very rich guy and he's very interested in your business opportunity.
Most countries have their own associations.
I did not know about that. So.
Yeah, but it's also the angels are also looking hard for companies to fund. So it's not like they are hiding somewhere. They want to be found.
Because they make money by giving money.
Mm-hmm.
Because they get equity in return.
Yeah. I don't think that the internet is a part of the definition, but it's kind of like you could run a crowdfunding business also offline, but it's not very practical.
The maybe it was written, which is mostly over the internet.
Yeah.
So
you could kind of like go through your neighborhood, for example, and ask for people to invest in your business idea, and then they would invest in mass. That would be crowdfunding.
You shall see.
So we are still missing a few.
Wait, which one's the yellow one? The yellow ones are the...
We actually color-coded the points.
We're still missing post-its. And we have now like half. I need to update my slides, so I will write it so clearly before I give you the slides that no one misses what was my point. Let's start talking about this as a class and let's reflect a bit. So we've gone through quite a lot of stuff about entrepreneurship, and interesting the leadership styles and how you can make people do what you want. That is something that people found interesting as well. And in the past, some students have found it interesting that there are so many different kinds of entrepreneurs. So you typically have this myth of like a startup founder who drops from college. But the fact that most people, most entrepreneurs, or the around 40s is the most common age to become an entrepreneur. That was interesting for some people. And mindset is listed in all of these. I think that is one of the most important things. And when I was interviewing for this job, and I was asked, what would you teach students? And I answered that the entrepreneur mindset is the most important thing to learn about entrepreneurship. So it's not rocket science. You just have to kind of go and do it. And then if you don't succeed, then, well, you gain some experience that you should do something else. It's not the end of the world. And also, if you don't try it out, then you never know if you have what it takes to make it. So that is one of the most important points that I would like to teach you. Then work-life relevant skills, I would have hoped that one of you would have listed the improvisation trainings that we did with my wife, so she would have been happy about it, but I can now tell her that at home. Networks, super important, present in most cases, and if you think about yourself when you need to get something done, it's usually through the people who you know, and it's important to also understand that who you know now is not the same thing as those people 10 years from now. So people, you don't know where you are in 10 years. You might be in 10 different countries, and then you have a network that spans at least 10 different countries. So that will develop. And mindset failure is also valuable. That is interesting. Did you think that failure is not valuable? Of course it's valuable. Like one of the things that we know about human learning is that you learn when you are kind of like there on the border of failure. If you never fail, then you're not challenging yourself enough. How many of you do sports? How many of you have done sports with a coach ever? And the coach makes you things that are kind of hard, and you don't always succeed, and then that's where learning happens. So if you play ice hockey, for example, and playing with people who are a bit better than you, playing chess, playing with a person who's a bit better than you, that will make you improve. Same here. So when you fail, then you learn. And also, failure means that you've tried out. So if there's a person with a saying that I started a business and then it failed, that looks good in your CV, not because you failed, but because you started. And important, bootstrapping, that is one of those, like, super important things to know, that you don't actually need a lot of money when you're creative and you're willing to use a bit unconventional resources like interns. And then this is not a linear process, rather it's trial and error. You iterate and you pivot to different directions. This is something that you'll talk more about in Venture Lab course. You'll talk about pivoting, and it is super important. Yeah, I can't read that writing. Important. Failure is important. Failure is a really important part of entrepreneurs. There's some people, we did not cover the failure chapter of the book, but if you want to read a bit more, I would recommend that as the next reading. Some people say that failure is kind of like the critical thing of entrepreneur. You fail and fail and fail until you succeed, and that's what entrepreneurship is about. So you never succeed on the first try, but it's kind of like a series of small failures, and then that leads you to a bigger success later. Just want to do that.
I can read Michael if you want, I can translate.
Learning how to leverage your resources and skills, e.g. bootstrapping.
Okay.
Yeah, it took me a while to read it. All right. So this concludes the course, and I'll send you an email about it when I have the grading, the results commented. There's still the assignments for this week, and then I'll grade you in the beginning of April when I come back from my winter vacation. So thanks for joining, and see you, at least some of you, in the master's thesis bootcamp then.
Yeah. Cool. Thank you very much.
Yep. Welcome.
Thank you.